Good? All right. We moved over here because this was going to be hopefully our last time out here for a while. We don't know. These things change rapidly. So we all know that we're supposed to be flexible and kind of move along with this the best that we can. We went inside and we got some favorable reviews on that. Some weren't that comfortable with it, but most people said they could hear better. But we tried to come up with maybe a compromise because I'm sort of on a straight shot here back to the machinery. And so I'm hoping maybe that I'll come through as clearly out here and to be able to talk to. This is really great. This right over here, it kind of reminds me of the front rows at church. All empty over there to the left. So if we're back out, maybe we'll get a few more people here. You can see the title of the lesson is The Parable of Israel. And that doesn't mean that Israel is a parable or something that's just a story. It is something that's very real. These were the real people of God. And the reason I'm referring to it as a parable is because parables usually have underlying stories to them. And it's important to get the main story and not pick through every aspect of it, then that usually can cause you to lose the meaning of it. But it is a parable in the sense that it represents all of us who continue to live on this earth that God has made. And so what I have found, when you look at the people of Israel, that we're not just looking at the history of God's people from the time of Moses to the ends of captivity. We're looking really at a look at ourselves. And I think when we are in an effort trying to work our way through what seems to be complicated, it's not all that complicated. We just have to learn to react, to respond appropriately, and realize that things are not always going to be exactly the way we want them to be. Things just get complicated, like with the fruit of the vine. Like Dave says, it is still fruit of the vine, but it's not the color we're used to. I mentioned to Rick that when we're in the Philippines, we get it all different kinds of colors, but it is still fruit of the vine, and it is still from the grape. So how are we like Israel? Well, I don't want to exactly start with a total negative on this, but there is a certain negativity to these people after they were in the land, in and around Egypt for a number of generations, 400 years we read. They get over there because of a famine in the area that is, you know, commonly referred to as Israel today, geographically. It used to be called Palestine. And they went to get food. And so Jacob and all his family went and settled in that area. And things went really, really well. They lived a very decent kind of life. But then Joseph, who was the son of Jacob that became a very powerful man in Egypt, when he died, everything changed. And they became slaves of the people of Egypt. And so God is not going to allow that to continue. And so he's going to do something about it. And of course, that's when Moses is selected, one who was of the royal family of Egypt. He selected him to be the one who was going to help to lead them out of the land. So they've gone through all the things leading up to leaving, you know, the 10 plagues and all things related to the challenging and the hardening of the heart of Pharaoh. And so we're in chapter 14 of verse 10. It says, as Pharaoh drew near, the soldiers are right there after they had escaped, and now they're determined, the soldiers of Egypt are determined that they are going to kill these escaping people of Israel. And so, behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened, that is, the people. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you, saying, leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Now, I want you to give some thought to that. They're actually very unhappy, according to what they're saying at that moment, that they are in the predicament that they're in. And they're thinking, I think we'd be better off if we were back in Egypt. And they make it sound like they didn't really want to leave at all. In chapter 2, down in verse 23 of Exodus, it says, it happened in the process of time the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage. And they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. There's a few other passages there that we could look to help us to understand that they really wanted to get out of there at one particular point in time. But now they're in a difficult place, in a difficult position, and everything changes. And you kind of wonder, is this just being a typical person, you know, where we are in the moment and we have a hard time remembering the good things that God has done for us? And so it's not going well now, and so we want it to be the way it was, even if I'm not all being all that honest about the way it was. I mean, you know, life really, you know, it is what it is. We're taking on things daily. And I tried to make this point last week, that even though we're in a different set of circumstances, you know, life hasn't changed all that much. I don't remember any of us, if you're looking at these things in terms of the presidents we've had, I don't recall anyone saying, oh, wow, it was a whole lot better in the days of President Obama or the days of President Bush. I don't remember hearing anybody talk like that. Did any of you talk like that? You probably thought it was just okay and it was just the way it was, and that's just what politics is, and you moved on with your life, even though things may not have been all that great. But now we're in a different place. We're in a time in our lives which is very, very different from anything we've experienced. And it's very easy for us to look at this moment and say, I don't think it's ever been this bad. Now, that may be true. But generally speaking, that's an overstatement all the time. Whenever we make these, it's the worst or it's the best. It's almost always an exaggeration. And so you can argue about that, and we can draw any conclusions that we want to draw. And you can take your view, and I can take my view, but I'm just telling you, that's the way we are with life. I don't look back at 20 or 30 years ago and say, man, things were really, really good. Boy, I remember when President Reagan was president. Oh, it was really, really great. Well, he may have been the kind of president you wanted, but I don't remember life being all that special for me. I don't believe that in any way I was missing out on challenges in life, the same sort of challenges I'm experiencing today. And so there's certain attitudes that seem to be dominant among everybody who's ever lived, that even though things are really bad, were not so bad in our minds back then, and then all of a sudden things go bad for us, then we really start looking very differently at the way it was back then. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And that's what happened to the Israelites. They're complaining about how awful it is. Of course, right at that point, there are the Egyptian soldiers, and they're very fearful of what may happen. But they seem to have an attitude that's built upon being very cynical. Now, remember what they said. They said, is it because of this there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Now, there may be, in the minds of some of these people, there may have been some truth here, you know, very sincere. But I think for the most part, this is just sarcasm. And they're really kind of overstating the case. You know, what did we come over here for? Well, they didn't have enough graves in there in Egypt to bury us, so we're out here again. You know, that's a, it's a kind of a gross overstatement. And one of the things I think that happens when we get involved in lives, living life day to day, and when things then kind of flow into an even more negative situation, it creates in us, because we've been happy, or at least acting like we're satisfied with the way we lived in Egypt, when they weren't. They groaned, they moaned, they complained. And so as they're in this predicament, they get very, very sarcastic. Now, the reason I bring this up is that some of us are more sarcastic than others. And a lot of times we don't really think about what we're saying. But even more so, we don't think about who's near us when we're making these kinds of statements. Now, if you would have been in this particular situation at that point in time and you were a person of Israel, and your family is all around you, and they're very, very much afraid, and the best you can come up with is, did they bring us here just to die? And what I'm saying is sometimes the things that we say loosely, in an effort to be funny or show that we have some sort of special insight into circumstances, we need to realize that if we say these kinds of things, there are people around us when we say them. And I have a sneaking suspicion there was a lot of bitterness within these people. If they'd been slaves for 400 years, you would expect that they would not be all that motivated about being positive about things. So maybe, as you'll notice there in the outline, maybe this is what comes from living a relatively meaningless life. I mean, they weren't happy with it, to be honest. And they had this opportunity to leave. But look how quick they were to look at it from a very cynical and sarcastic kind of way. And I would just suggest to you that God doesn't really want us to be people like that. And the more we see that life comes through what God expresses in the meaning of life, the better off we're going to be and the better our attitude is going to be. Because God's not looking for people who are real quick to have the quip about what's going on, or so quick to knock people. Sometimes we do this even among brethren. And we have to realize that it has consequences. I mean, you know, God could look down on this and say, oh, boy, these people are really being idiots. And he would be right. But what about those who are listening? Was that the kind of language you would expect people to use, trying to inspire people to be strong? Absolutely not. So here they are going through this life. They're very, very upset. But God's not looking for that kind of person. You know that. We would look at that, and it'd be very easy for us to blame them, put them down. But that's not really being fair, because we very easily fall into this trap ourselves. So we're trying to learn from the people of Israel things that we can learn about ourselves. But the kind of people God's looking for are not people who state this kind of sarcasm. It's like David said, of course, another Israelite. In 1 Samuel 17, verse 37, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Well, you go do that then." Not really believing. He was probably being sarcastic himself. But the attitude that nobody was really, at that point in time, this period of great threat from the Philistines, nobody was willing to stand up. And how would you have felt if you would have been near David at this time? Now, if you were really optimistic and you really knew God was going to be there to take care of you and you believed it like David, you would be really, really excited by that. But the defeatist attitude, when you go back and you read the story, it was really from the larger part of the group who are there afraid of the Philistines. Notice how Paul describes himself and how he looked at the future, a future that's full of faith and not sarcasm. In 2 Timothy 4:16, it says, "At my first defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me. But may it not be counted against them." In other words, he wasn't being sarcastic and negative about these people. He just hoped God wouldn't hold it against them. "But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that through me the proclamation might be fully accomplished," that's of the gospel, "and that all Gentiles might hear, and I was rescued out of the," what? "Out of the lion's mouth." Now, he may have been talking very literal about that, because a lot of Christians were destroyed that way by the people of Rome. But he may also have been speaking somewhat figuratively about that, having the heart of David in the way he looked at the situation. And his attitude was seen there in verse 18. "The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen." So can you see the difference between that and the people of Israel, you know, at that time? And how the sarcasm maybe came from the fact that they've been in slavery all that time. It's quite possible that that had something to do with it. But they had just accepted, it seems, this slavery for a long time, or they had no choice. And then all of a sudden, that life, which really was a life they were not happy with, I mean, they're so without meaning in their lives, they're just thinking, well, we'd just be better off back there. I mean, we might as well die. I've died back there. You can imagine why Moses got so frustrated with these people. And he had to make a plea to God from time to time. What are you going to do about these individuals? And so, when you consider who these people were and what it meant to be the kind of people that God wants you and me to be, despite these circumstances, I mean, there's a lot of things about life that are vain. And you can go ahead and look at some passages in Ecclesiastes. I mean, I have some that are picked out there, but you don't have to look at those. It's all over the book of Ecclesiastes. The sense of hopelessness that Solomon was experiencing as he was trying to live life in a way that got meaning from what the world offered. And he just says it's all vain. In fact, when he talks about all the hard work he was doing, it dawned on him that he might not live long enough to really enjoy that work, the wealth that came from that work. And that was his attitude was, well, what's the point of living if I don't get to enjoy this stuff? That's looking at the world, because really, this is so temporary, what you and I are experiencing. And each moment that we live demonstrates whether we are a person of faith or a person of negativity and cynicism. Notice how Peter described it to the people who are being persecuted as he's writing his letter. He says, "In this you greatly rejoice what you're experiencing, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire and may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Christ." And get this now. "And though," this is verse 8, "and though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory." Why? What is it you and I have to be happy about, whatever the circumstances may be? He says, "obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls." So many of us go through life, as I say there at the beginning of point one, just engaging in routines, and these things really don't do much for us in terms of our meaning to our lives. And, of course, that's what Solomon was talking about. And the individuals there who were freaking out because the Egyptians were there, knocking on the door, looking like they were going to destroy them, all they could think about was that particular moment. And God wants you and I to be much more than that. We've got a moment here. But God wants you to rise above the moment. He wants me to rise above the moment. Even though what is going on in our lives can be meaningless. But the reality is that our life does mean something, despite the moment. And that's why I think Moses would get so upset with the people of Israel, because they wouldn't appreciate what God had done for them. And as soon as things turned in a negative way, they just went right with it and started trashing God and trashing Moses. So things get different. Things change. Point two there says, our fear of changes can make us prisoners. And sometimes we like being in prison. Every once in a while, you'll see the story of someone who was in jail for a long time and gets out. He's been pretty much into the routine of prison life for 15, 20, 30 years. And they get out, and they just would be just as happy. And you've heard them tell their story, and they say, I just feel uncomfortable out here, unchained, with freedom. I'd rather just be back in prison. And it was because things were different for him. It was because his life changed dramatically. I'd just rather stay there in prison. And sometimes when we're afraid of accepting change for what it is, we're happy, unfortunately, to just stay in our own personal prisons because it's safe. Israel at that time, as I say there, they felt good enough, I guess, to say, I'd much rather be back there in prison. Why? Well, because they knew what the life was all about. Yeah, it was tough. And yeah, there were times of persecution. And they were, I mean, remember when they killed all the young boys and Moses was spared way back at the beginning of the story of Exodus. But, you know, they learned to deal with it. They learned to live with it. And so they don't step up to the plate when it's time to do that. And so when we have our own personal anxiety struggles and or disorders, what do? They actually put us in jail, our own personal jail. Some of us are afraid of flying. Some of us then, coupled with that, are afraid of heights. Some of us are afraid of elevators. Some of us are afraid of crowds. And on it goes. I'm not in any way diminishing these disorders, but what I am saying, here's what they do to us. They put us in our room. They lock us in the room because we're afraid of dealing with something in life that we've just never gotten comfortable with. And so we're afraid of it. So what do? We hide out. And that's the sad thing about individuals who are afraid of crowds, and I can understand that. I can understand they might have had circumstances in their lives that make it difficult for them to be around other people. But is that the way to live? I mean, to be that way is to want to change from that. So really, when you think about it, when we allow fear to control us, when we allow the fear of change to control us, we are letting life control us. And we are no longer people of freedom. I say there in point D, we often decide, now this is, I think, true for Israel and I think true for us, we often decide it's better to live less. And why do we do that? Why are we afraid to do different things, to accept change? Why do we do that? Because all the stuff we've been doing up to that point in time at least has kept us from hurting ourselves. And so rather than trying to come out of our shell, spiritually, most intentionally is what I'm talking about here. We just keep ourselves locked in it because we're not really trying to live it out to the most. We're just trying to do what? Suffer less. And what Paul said and what Peter said and what Moses tried to help the people of Israel understand is it's worth it. Unfortunately, when the rewards don't come to us easily, sometimes, as I say, we expect rewards to come easily and without sacrifice. And I say not in theory, but in practice. I think we all understand that from a very intellectual perspective, looking at what the scriptures teach, is that we are told that we should expect less in this life in order to know that we're going to get more in the life to come. So that's what we know intellectually and scripturally. However, I'm afraid I don't live that way and you don't live that way. And I think this kind of illustrates this. I mean, we are so reactionary to the things that go on around us. Notice there in point A under 3, Israel wanted freedom, but they didn't want the pain. Notice the things they say. 14:11, oh no, we're going to be killed. 16:3, oh no, we're going to starve to death. Oh no, we're going to die of thirst. We can't live that way. We can't live our lives in fear. We have to live our lives in power. And that's to not be afraid of changing and reacting differently to an environment than maybe how we feel most comfortable doing it. That's the challenge of the scriptures. It always has been. Now, when we are going through what we think are as bad times, a lot of times, again, we look back and we look in a very positive way about the past. And if you read there in Numbers chapter 11, verse 5, they talk about, oh, we had so much food when we were back in Egypt. And again, that's the way we talk. When we talk about the past, most of us, we look at it in extremes. I'm not saying everybody thinks it's great, but what I am saying is we either think it was really, really bad or really, really great. We get rather extreme in our thinking. And again, that's not productive. Just take it on day by day. Yeah, sometimes they're really bad. But according to what God says, it's not something that I can't do and function with and live and still be pleasing to Him. Israel didn't really react very well to the change when they were taken out of the land of Egypt. And I think it's because sometimes we're happy to be where we are rather than stepping onto the field and taking our place as a member of the team. Israel really, in reality, was always full. We're told that after they complained about possibly starving. But for what? What, to complain more or to serve God? Unfortunately, sometimes we want the Garden of Eden in this life when all along we know we're looking for something beyond this life. And so what we're really doing is we're wanting the garden, but we're getting the promised land where the power of faith had to be in the hearts of these people when they were first supposed to go in. It was going to take work. It was going to probably take the loss of life to do it. But it was going to be worth it. So we're never going to get the ideal. It's never going to just reach a point where the curve and law of life, and to use our terminology, is just totally flattened. It doesn't work that way. We've got to react to the negative in a very positive, full of faith kind of heart. So I ask you in conclusion, how do you feel about your life right now? How do I feel about mine? Well, as I say, probably not a whole lot different from the same life of last year. As a general view, yeah, you've got all this stuff that we're dealing with. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. But for the most part, again, I don't think you would compare it to the past and say, oh, it was really great last year. It was just okay last year. You were still living your life just like you're living it. But now we've got something to really live and stand up for. That we can be the people who are not afraid to adapt and to change. The circumstances have changed, but there is and always has been. In my 71 years, there's always been something to drag us down or to drag me down. So if we can overcome these same patterns of we see in Israel, our lives can be so much more productive. Yes, it's a true story about the people of Israel. But it is a great parable that figuratively describes who we are and how we go through our lives and how we must be brave, realizing there are going to be times that we must not be afraid of change, that we must adapt well to the circumstances around us. Ultimately, with the idea that we're going to be with God someday. So I pray that as we think about our relationship with Christ, for those who are outside of Christ, it's still the same old message. Jesus came to save sinners, people who would recognize that they are. That was why he came. And what comes with that is this incredible explosion of what life can be for us when we know that's what we have. And we know this meaningless drivel that we have to go through all the time in this life, so much of it, is not what controls us. It is the power of that salvation. Thank you for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it.